do the scope down, but I was thinking we could do, if it's cool, and we could maybe, we could fight over the chairs. Some people want to sit on tables, but if we could bring the panelists up, if that would be cool, and then open it up. And if it's okay, what I'll do is we'll have a mic up here for the panelists, and then I'll sort of play Phil Donahue here with this mic in the audience. And then we'll take questions. And please, I guess one thing I can say just as moderator is, you know, you can just try and be kind of focused with what you're trying to ask and whatnot, and so we can hear a lot of different voices and sort of keep the conversation going. And so yeah, panelists, come on up.
Hi, first of all, thank you very much for all the perspectives. One thing, I'm not sure if it's a question, but maybe a commentary about unifying a common front. When you come to issues of fairness that all you guys are talking about, somehow I start from the point of view that fairness is all connected. It's really not different issues that requires unitedness. The dilemma and the problem is to get people to recognize the interrelation of the issues involved. And second thing is that reach the silent majority who are distracted, so distracted that when you approach them with all the issues that you just talked about, they respond to you by a blank stare, you know, not knowing exactly what you're talking about. I mean, that's the issue. I mean, with a quick look around here, I see a lot of people who are have vested interest in all the issues that we have. But it would have been great if we had another 100 people of average Joes who would have come and listened to these issues. To just make the point, make it clear, like, for example, right now, we're having this epidemic of influenza, you know, and every day you turn the TV on and talk about influenza. And they all talk about where it comes from. It comes from Mexico, we all know that. And our solution as a progressive society that has lots of money and stuff like that is to work on influenza vaccine, get our hands on Tamiflu, close our borders and stuff like that, not knowing that this influenza is produced or is incubated by pigs, and pigs are down there in Mexico or in China or stuff like that. When you go to any third world country, people who are earning 11 cents an hour, the only way to eat is to have the pigs and poultry side by side, living side by side. Therefore, that becomes the incubator for influenza epidemic developing. So the issue of influenza is not one of trying to protect ourselves, but actually recognizing that it's the result of global poverty, the fact that people have to rely on their pigs and chickens in order to get their multiples of protein, and recognizing the connection between all those factors and making difference here.
The real issue around, I guess, trying to explain in many ways, in any way that we can, the interrelationship of the issues.
Exactly, yeah, but also, in order to approach people, the second thing is how do you approach that silent majority? And it's not going to happen by a group of people who are have the same vested interest to gather in this kind of area and say, let's unite. I think an approach was just so refreshing that gentleman there talked about a six-year experiment of getting people to show up and talk about varied things that have nothing to do with steelmaking. You know, they talk about Palestine, they talk about what they do in their own communities, meaning that we have to go back to our communities, you know, not Hamilton as a community, but each 5,000 population, you know, around the school system or around one neighborhood. And then the people who are set in interest to go and plug into those communities to bring the issues to the people and create that dynamic of discussion within that those communities. So people who are the sound majority come out there and get exposed to the ideas. So
can you let the panelists maybe respond to what you're saying, Rosie?
I have the same response. Yes. Anybody else?
Is there a mic here?
See, one of the reasons we have to do this every week, get together, discuss, is that the way the society is now, the bodies that are supposed to carry that on aren't doing it. So one is the media, one are the education, the other is the educational system, and the other is the parliament. So they don't have the discussions in the parliament. It's just a fraud. It's everyone recognizes like that. It's a circus. If you actually watch it, there's no discussion there. It's just posture. In previous times, you actually, if you read the answers, they actually had quite elaborate discussions about bills. Like this is like 100 years ago, let's say, about all the different aspects of it. So that's not there. The educational institutions. Not anyone who's associated knows nothing personal here, but they are very lacking in developing that discussion. And then the media, they're so well known now for just doing spin that you literally, any question of Siri, you're so thrilled when you can get a letter into the editor of, 10 sentences about the opposing view, and you're, I'm so excited. Meanwhile, they just drown you out. And then you have CNN and the Fox, and so they literally smother. So you can't have that discussion. So that's why 6 years ago we started this forum where you provide information and then you develop that discussion. And without that, you're not going to develop anything. Because of all these three bodies aren't playing their role in developing the discussion.
In a very practical way, I just dying to discuss poverty and tiny numbers in Hamilton and why we cannot unite to work in a couple of policies, one at a time. And I see the income security group working on their own while we are trying to get other work done, but they are on their own and they're. They're making some changes because they have been consistent in doing the work. So if there is some gain in the last report of the poverty report of the Social Planning and Research Council that was just launched a couple of weeks ago, there was a change, and that change in the income security was due to that particular movement, which is the group of people, but persistently working towards something very specific. So to me, if we can work one issue at a time, or we can start working one issue and react all at the same time, I cannot stop thinking about my experience back in my original country, because that brought people to the streets when there was something that was really hurting, and when we wanted minimum wages to be increased. And that we demanded, we went out and did it, and strikes on the country, and all these kinds of things that I'm sure you don't want to see here, but there must be a way, because this is democracy.
Can you take
I was going to say something, but now I'm actually really just curious as to how you mobilized that many people. can we just learn?
Well, there were the couple of groups that were the peasants and the students and the workers, right? So the peasants, the students, and the workers were the ones that put it all together. And they were in their own way, their own movements. So the peasants were working to support the workers, and the workers and the students would support the workers. But it's just all. It takes years. It is, yes, and it took an army to break it down. So, it's a totally different reality because it's an underdeveloped country with real, real poverty. And it's visible. Over here, we tend to talk about poverty, but we really don't define what poverty is. Poverty is the lack of healthcare at the moment when needed. It's not access to food, really, really good food. The So if we cannot define poverty, and a lot of discussion about poverty, we really don't know what poverty is, because we are not poor suffering the poverty. So we really don't know, at least. It's just, the conditions are practically unknown and not visible, and the media really don't portray that poverty in that way.
Can I just say that I've tried before to get an ask, to get a talk with yourself on your experiences? Would people want to see that if that was set up? Yeah? Okay. Right here then. It's on. So if it's cool, we'll take another question from the audience.
To me, there were just a couple things that were missing from the discussion tonight. The first one was, first, how do we define progressive? Because there are a lot of people who define themselves as progressive, and as someone who self-identifies as that, I don't really see them as that. The second is, to what extent is this going to be a social, do you see this as a social movement, and how much involvement is there going to be, say, with a political party or a parliamentary side? And the last one is, the reflections or the opinions that were being presented tonight, to me, aren't in any way, shape, or form divergent. To me, they all come together trying to defend dignity and people's rights, you know, be it a union movement, the trans or LGBT community, or the environmental movement. They're all standing up and trying to affect big changes in the way that we organize our society. So to me, there's a lot of common factors, and the problem, I think, really does come down to, we're so involved in these smaller groups, how do we then start communicating in between those groups?
So I guess the first question was related. Yeah, well, I guess political.
All right, how would you define progressive was the first one. What extent is there going to be, does there need to be political involvement, like on a parliamentary level? And do you not just see the biggest obstacle being talking to each other as opposed to totally reorganizing?
I don't like to start.
To be honest, I was kind of trying to get at some sort of definition of progressive when I was fiddling around with an analysis of power, a particular analysis of oppression. And so I think I'm kind of going to sit on that, and I think it does have to gestate. I still think that probably even what we understand as progressive, and I totally understand what you're saying about there are people who self-identify as progressive, and I'm shocked. But that notion of progressive is probably going to change and be dynamic. I don't know if we can hammer it out in a really concrete way, like in this instance. I think I'm a big fan of, here is something we need to do in this moment. What is the direction we need to take that is progressive? That would be my take on question one. Somebody else want to speak to question one?
I don't really like the word progressive. I think because maybe like this culture's definition of progress is deeply problematic and has led to all these messes that we're in. So I guess when I think of a social movement that I would get on board with and where it's leading, where ideally it should be leading towards, for me, would be like a massive paradigm shift, probably, or definitely. And I think ultimately it's about creating sustainable relationships with each other, with the planet, with our culture, with our bodies, with our identities, with our diversity. And when I say sustainable, I don't mean it in the way that British Petroleum does. I mean it in the way that like permanently possible, able to be continued unto the seventh generation or forever. And I think sustainability is just as important environmentally as it is culturally, as it is socially, as it is personally. So I think that's what I'm thinking of when I'm thinking of the progressive, United Progressive Movement. To answer your second question about the involvement of the government, I think I became an activist when I learned that my government did not have my best interests at heart, and no government thus far has ever managed to change my mind. And I would really like us to relocalize our cultures and find ways to return to direct democratic relationships, which for me means like abolishing the state. But I realize that that might be a little bit hard for the larger progressive groups to get behind, so maybe that wouldn't be on the poster. I don't know.
I think that we have to relearn who we are and how we relate to each other before we can even get to that place where we can do direct democracy. And I mean, that's a dream for me as well. I think that again, it's about relationships and knowing who you're connected with. And life-affirming for me is kind of where I think about it. And not in the way that it gets taken up in other places that I don't like, but that so much of our culture and so much of who we are and so much of what we're taught to do is not life-affirming. It's not personally affirming. We're taught to go against our best interests almost in many, many ways. And so I think that gets taken up in all our social structures, and our social structures tend to be that way as well. But yeah, it always makes me nervous when people say they want to abolish the state, because my personal experience is, well, not my personal experience, but my sense of history is that if you don't have something better set up to come in, you get something worse or the same. So, yeah. So, and I think the other thing that defines progressive is somebody who sees possibility outside, that sees, wow, it's a tired phrase, but outside the box, that sees setting up life in different ways than exist now.
I just wanted to comment on the last statement that you made about maybe it's just a matter of talking to each other. And I think that's a big part of it. I mean, I know, and probably everybody up here could talk about experiences where they have gone out and connected with other groups in the community working on an issue maybe for different reasons than what's motivating them at the core, and finding that, you know, you just click right away because there are those underlying common goals that you all have to try to make things better, and it's often, you're right, it's just a matter of making the connections and opening the doors to conversations, finding the time to do it, because we've talked about time and the challenge of time, but I think this is something maybe we just need to be more mindful of, because the synergies out there are huge, and so it's probably worth the investment of time to explore and see what we can make happen.
So I think really cool people.
I think it's fun. I have a really specific example of how we can break communications and not spend the time. But time is a factor. Time is a really big factor. If we don't have the time, we don't have the time, right? Because we are busy running the organization, running our lives, running the time to comply with it, you know, the role that you have in this show, right? And then the days are 24 hours and we sleep a few, but we still have to continue doing the work. But between organizations, for example, you know, we could be, you know, self-identify as feminist organization. One organization decided to do a protest, and you know, on a day, X day, and they invite everybody to the protest. And they decided that this is going to be this way, and so you show up at this time, and the question was to me, are you supporting this protest? I said, yes, I am. But did you come out on a Saturday at 11:30 in the morning? No, I cannot. So therefore, that was the end of the conversation. The protest went ahead, and I left I suppose I did not support the protest. So that is part of the theme of building of the relationships. I am totally convinced that building relationships is what we need. But to do that, we also need the time. And to work under the consensus model is even more time consuming. So at one point to another, we have to negotiate this and see how serious this is to really either make the time or make a commitment that nothing will be moved forward until we reach a certain agreement and everybody has an opinion and or at least all the parties have a chance to say yes, to say no, I have reasons, and let's work together, let's move this around and do it in a different way.
I found the most interesting part about your question was your comment about rights, because as far as I'm concerned, that's the crucial issue for the 21st century, and as far as anyone in this room or anyone in Canadian society, it's going to come down to people affirming their rights, and that's where you, in my humble opinion, that's how you're going to unite everyone. We in our local, we gravitate to people who are standing up for their rights. Like in Canada, that's one of the hardest things to do because you get attacked. So that's, as I mentioned, like the Six Nations, when they stood up to affirm their rights, they were viciously attacked. And that's why we went to support them. And there's all this thing to do with the Palestinians, it's anyways, whatever, the workers' rights. This, who's standing up in the society fighting for their rights? It's who we gravitate to, and those are the ones, in my opinion, are going to change society. And then the other part, the beginning of your question is then, if you want, just my opinion, is that's what group determines, like that's what determines if you're progressive or not. If you will stand up for your own rights and support the people in the society who are fighting for their rights.
Can we take another question from the audience?
I just want to make a comment about that. The other part of rights is responsibility. Some people have made reference to that.
We need this just to hear.
So, in terms of responsibility, my perspective is that the people in power are not taking responsibility and have not been taking it for many, many years. I think we are here because we want to take that responsibility. We want to take responsibility for what's happening. We're concerned. And we want to participate in some kind of change and move forward. I'm not quite sure what else I need to say about that, but that's just
have Ashley and
Lola. Okay, my question isn't so much a question, it's a proposal. I agree that communication, as you said, and time, as Deirdre said, are our greatest barriers to building this movement. And my proposal is that we use resources that we have available to us already. ActLocally.info is a great, fantastically underused resource in the community. But my thought is that we could build something even more advanced something. There's a website called The Name that I like to use for building networks so that people can get together. And on that website, you can put working groups and things like that. But even if we could build our own website, you know, like the Hamilton Activist Network or something along those lines, where, you know, we could pull on the strengths of all the different organizations, but not just the organizations, the individuals in our community, and something that would be easily accessible because we simply don't have the time to get together and do something like this every week or even every month where we want to have the same people consistently coming out because we're just all too busy for that. But I was wondering if we were to put together a website or a network online or something like along those lines, how many people here and how many of the organizations here would be interested in participating in that?
Sure. I think there was a gentleman.
Thank you very much. I'm going to address my comment, I think, more to Ralph. And did you have a good day today, sir?
Yeah.
Great. Apologies for being familiar by calling you Ralph, but I didn't want to do you a disservice by mispronouncing your last name, which I can never remember. My name is Joseph St. George. The comment I wanted to make is that today, being May Day, we had something like, apparently, about 1 million people in Cuba turning out. The majority of them were probably persuaded or even coerced to show up. They show up. Lots of other countries had massive amounts of people following the tradition of May Day for the workers and others. And here in Hamilton, even though we've had double the numbers, the show that we had is approximately 750 people, you're saying, and it was organized through the steel workers, as is proper, or have been based on being a steel making town and a working town. We've now moved over more to people employed in health sciences. But to me, the inertia of the Canadian, I'm going to say profile, that's not quite right, the Canadian character, is we are so polite, mild-mannered, trained from childhood not to speak up, not speak out of turn, and all the rest of it, that I think that 750 stalwart people were March Day, that what you gave about 90 seconds on the TV tonight, is part of a reflection on how Hamilton is. Here we are, a steelworking town with our traditions, our past, not just steel, but all the others, and we haven't got the gumption for other people and everybody. We should have had maybe, I can't even begin to guess, 5,000 maybe or something. So, can I have your reflections on that, please, sir?
First of all, to have 700 or so workers marching through the industrial core of Hamilton in this day and age is, in my opinion, is quite an accomplishment.
I agree.
To answer your question about why there's not more, or, you know, like, I mean, the thing is, when they announced they were closing Stelco, the people, like, I'm not a native Hamiltonian, but the native Hamiltonians were completely devastated. I actually had a reporter come from the Spectator who was going to report on it. He broke down while he was talking to me because, you know, his brother worked there, his uncle worked there, you know, for 3-4 generations. And so it was a shock to the people of Hamilton that this could happen. And so, what is it that's stopping? So, you know, that this anger, this is unjust, it shouldn't happen, what do we do, and all this. So, the first thing, our analysis of what's going on is that first thing, it's being presented that, oh, don't worry, when the economy picks up, then we'll start up again. So that's design. It comes right from John Sermon, the CEO of U.S. Steel, to the politicians that don't worry, we don't have to do anything. Like, we're raising the question, there should be emergency measures to deal with this crisis. And they're all, oh, no problem, let's just wait till the economy recovers. So that's the paralyzed, you don't worry. So that's first. Second is the other point, you know, you say the Canadians are very nice and polite, and, you know, and so, I mean, that's not really something wrong with that. But the other characteristic of Canadians is that they're brought up, don't discuss politics. So they usually say politics and religion, you know, that you never discuss that in the kitchen table, you never discuss. So that means then that discussion of leaving religious part aside, but the political part, don't participate in that. Someone else will look after that. So meaning the politicians. So you don't have to worry about it, and it's, you know, it's dirty, it's this, it's a waste of time, they're all, they have 101 reasons. But everything they do when they shaft you is politically. So, but we're not supposed to discuss it. Then all of a sudden you get stuck, what do we do? Oh, well, I don't know. And then at the end, what you're supposed to do is every 4 years decide which one of them is going to chapter. So that's what's blocking. So you know, we're nice Canadians, so you really shouldn't do anything. Now we're upset, but okay, why don't we just wait? The economy will recover, and everything will be okay. And then don't worry about politics. The politicians will look after that. So it's that. So in order to get 700 workers out to just do that much, it takes a lot of work of explaining. Of, you know, first of all, this, in my experience, this is the worst thing I've ever seen going on, not just because it's South, but because of what's going on in the economy. So there's something different here. Kevin referred to, you know, that there's a big drive on to dismantle everything that people fought, you know, like we fought for 60 years that South Dakota to get certain rights. Okay, so they want to dismantle that. They want to wipe out all organizations where people have some collective security. That's the other thing that's going on. So this is where they're after the unions. So they want to get unions, first of all, to agree to shaft themselves. Then they're going to smash it. So this, because they want everyone on your own. You're on your own. And then that's the society they want. So we're trying to fight that, right, with Canadians being very nice, with no culture of having any political discussions with, so everyone telling them, don't worry, the economy's going to pick up, so you don't have to do anything. So that's, like, all of that is sitting on top of us, and we're, you know, slowly building to fight it. We basically are saying, we may go down, but we're going to go down fighting. So that's our motto. Okay? We may get beat, they may end up beating us, but...
How do you suggest we change that, though?
Well, that's part of the discussion here.
Could we let... Deirdre wanted to jump in. Thanks, Ron. And then we should keep it moving.
It's interesting. What I hear here is, increasingly, in my experience, over the last number of decades, we've seen the depoliticization, first of the middle class, I think. And now I think what we're almost talking about is the near depoliticization of a working class as well. And I'm struggling to find answers for this as to why this and how this has happened. And why it's happened so particularly within North America, because my perception is that it is, to some extent, a North American phenomenon. And I mean, I can't help come back to the sort of the specter, monster of mass-mediated consumer capitalism, which, you know, specializes in distraction. Exactly. We have a sort of mass-mediated culture that specializes in, as you say, manufacturing distraction. And so, rather than manufacturing dissent, we are manufacturing desires for SUVs, if you will, to come back to your SUV and happiness kind of point. I think you can even see this happening at this very moment, where you see in the major press, things like there's an appetite for escapism in, you know, current movies and in current fiction and such. So our sort of almost knee-jerk, I think, acculturated reaction now to problems is, oh my God, I can't deal with this. Let's talk about a fairy princess in Disney World. And we'll think it's the Disney World next year. Not to pick on Disney per se, but... Well, actually, I kind of like it, but so I think this is a major factor in sort of the depoliticization of people, and unfortunately, I don't have a solution.